My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than their worth in real cash value. Ramp's business cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp for free. Just go to ramp.com/easy. Ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Cards issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, I'm Sam Edis.
And I'm Amy Nelson. Welcome to What's Her Story with Sam and Amy.
This is a show about the world's most remarkable women, their professional and personal journeys.
Together, we'll hear from gold medalists, best-selling authors, and leaders of the world's most iconic brands.
Today's guest almost needs no introduction. We have Gloria Steinem, icon of the women's movement, journalist, and activist.
Well, we have a lot of questions to try to tackle with you.
Okay. I don't know if I have answers, but...
I feel like you do. So you had a very unusual childhood. How did that impact your early decisions in adulthood? What job to take? Where to live?
Because... I'm not sure, of course, but I think because I didn't go to school that much, I don't think I went to school a full year until I was in high school. So, and because my family was traveling and so on, that may have contributed to the fact that I've never also had a job. I've always been a freelancer. Perhaps I never got accustomed to the idea of going to the same place every day. So it's been an advantage for a writer because I'm accustomed to working at home and to an irregular schedule, not to mention an irregular paycheck.
At age 10, your parents separated and you became your mom's primary caretaker. How do you think that impacted decisions you made in your adult life?
Well, that's deep, you know. I think I never wanted to become a woman alone with a child, which is what my mother was. And I also think in a way, because I had been a caretaker, it probably assisted in my feeling that I didn't have to have children. I didn't need to be a caretaker again. I'm not sure, but I think so.
So you talk about growing up in a neighborhood where men were valued by what they did and women were valued by how they look and what their husbands did. Now, I have to say I live in a neighborhood a lot like that today. So why does this construct still exist? Has it changed?
Well, it's changed a lot. It's changed a huge, huge amount. It's almost unrecognizable since the ancient days when I was growing up. But it is still true that, especially if a woman has children, it's very difficult for her to make enough money to support herself and those children, even if she wishes to. So the traditional dependency is way less frequent, but it's still present. And it's interesting to me that in a categorical way, those are the women who elected Trump. It was white women in the suburbs who were dependent on their husband's income. And so, in a sense, were voting their interests, not their own interests.
And why?
If your identity, your name, and your income depends on someone else, you vote for them.
So I have to share a personal anecdote with you. When I met you was at the Makers Conference in 2014. And I imagine you have some of these moments in your life where you look back on them and you just are mortified and embarrassed. And my moment of meeting you is one of those in my life. And I'll tell you why. It's because I asked you to take a picture with me and then I didn't like the way I looked and asked you to retake it. Mm-hmm. And I...
But why is that so terrible? I mean, maybe I didn't like the way I looked either. I don't know.
Well, I just felt like here you are, this icon of, you know, women's empowerment and strength. And I was focusing on something so superficial. I was so excited to meet you and I transformed it into something so superficial.
Well, I don't remember it in that way. You remember it in that way. So you're endowing it with the feelings that went into it. But it probably was a perfectly reasonable request.
Well, in general, how do you think about beauty? I mean, beauty has been such a theme in how people talk about you. And then when I just read your book, The Revolution from Within, it really seemed like you are this incredible intellect and academic. And a lot of people only see you as this beautiful feminist. Mm. So how do you think of beauty in your life?
First of all, beauty is no credit to us, and also it perishes. So it's not a good thing to depend on. And I certainly resented it in the earlier years when the movement was just getting started. And I remember, I mean, the most symbolic event for me was that Newsweek magazine asked me to pose for a cover when they were doing their first ever cover story about the women's movement, which they thought, oh, maybe this little thing is newsworthy, you know. So I said, are you kidding me? I'm not going to, you know, one white woman on the, no, that can't, that, you know, that so does not represent a movement. And they anyway took a photograph with a telephoto lens at a rally and put me on the cover of Newsweek anyway. And I so resented that because I thought it was bad for the movement to have a singular image. That isn't what a movement is.
And how do you think about beauty today?
I don't. Mm. one of the great things, the great fan-fucking-tastic things about being old is you don't think about it that much. I mean, you wash and maybe you color your hair, you get some, but the idea of being identified by how you look is sort of gone. You know, it's a prison that starts when you're about 10 and starts to end when you're 50 or 60. So it's kind of great. You know, it's free at last.
You wrote that women may be the only group that grows more radical with age. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's part of what we were just discussing. That you're pretty much not totally out of the beauty prison. I mean, probably neither men nor women are totally out of that. There are all kinds of men with toupees and, you know, plastic surgery. So, but but you're much more out of it. And you're past the time when you, if you have been identified with a partner or husband's social identity, you're probably past that point. So I do think that women over 60 or so, like girls before they're 9 or 10, are the most free.
So how do we break out of that prison between the ages of 10 and 50 or 60? How do we get past that?
Well, I think we're encroaching on it, don't you? I mean, because, Marilyn Monroe famously thought her life was over at 30. So at least we've gotten to 60. And I think that little girls have been freed, especially by athletics. You know, for girls to identify with what their bodies can do as opposed to how their bodies look is huge. And there's also getting rid of racism, because that's profound in this country. And colorism used to exist within the Black community, is pretty much gone. So, you know, we can make a lot of progress by just understanding that each of us is born as a unique miracle that could never have happened before and could never happen again.
You know, one of the things you just touched upon, there's recently been a breakthrough regarding the awareness of systemic racism. Do you think the same strides have been made regarding gender bias? And if not, why not?
I think they're not exactly different, because Black women are the leadership of the women's movement, in part because they experience double discrimination and in part because they see both kinds of discrimination. Even from the very first public opinion poll that was done about women's opinions about the what was then called the women's liberation movement, Black women were more than twice as likely to support it as white women were. And look at the vote. I mean, I think 96% of Black women voted for Hillary Clinton and 50-some percent of white women voted for Donald Trump. I mean, I rest my case.
I want to pivot to your career. Can you talk about the launch of your career in your 20s?
Well, I never thought I was launching a career. I mean, the term career didn't. For one thing, we were working until we got married, because that was still the pattern of the day. It was more following what I cared about. I mean, I did notice that when I was writing, it was the only time I didn't think I should be doing something else. So I was freelancing. And I was trying to write about what I loved and cared about, which was not that easy in the beginning, because women's magazines were way more likely. I mean, they weren't interested in political articles, or, you know, they had to have articles to support their advertisers about. So profiles were as far away as I could get. Right.
What was the first piece that you remember being paid for?
I think it was a piece in the New York Times on the op-ed page about Barbara Walters, I think, maybe, because she had just become the first woman on the Today Show who wasn't just serving coffee.
So how did you start Ms. Magazine?
I had been working at New York Magazine and helped to start it. So I understood a little bit of how you could start a women's magazine. I asked a lot of friends to come and sit in my living room and see how they felt about it, because they were also women who had been writing for a variety of publications, and especially women's magazines. And we were all just kind of despairing of the women's magazines that existed, not because the editors weren't smart, great women, they were, but because they mainly were called upon for articles that supported advertisers. So there would be a whole article about hair care, even though we know how to shampoo our hair, and a whole another one about mascara, and maybe a celebrity thrown in there. So we looked at Esquire and The Atlantic, and I don't know what else existed. And we thought, well, you know, why can't there be a magazine for women that has articles about things we actually want to read? So because I was working at New York Magazine, I had the luck of and the kindness of Clay Felker, who was the editor, who let us do a sample issue of Ms. Magazine with a separate cover in as a bind-in in New York Magazine, and then as an independent one-shot issue. And it was on the newsstands. And I remember traveling to California. I was on a television show, and someone called and said, you know, we can't find it on the newsstands. And I called Clay Felker in a panic, and I said, oh, you know, it never got here. It never got here. And it turned out it had sold out.
Wow.
We had cover dated it spring in case it just was there like a lox on the newsstand for a long time. We didn't want to embarrass the movement. And it sold out in 8 days.
Wow.
So we realized how crucial it was. And we got the most extraordinary letters, bags and bags full of letters that are now residing in the Smith College archive, I hope, with women saying, you know, I feel as if a friend came into my house. I feel as if I've been alone, but now, you know, I know that I'm not crazy. The system is crazy.
How did you finance the magazine?
Poorly. Well, we had the success of the preview issue to go on. And so we had subscribers already. You know, that was very important. And then because of a group then called Warner Communications, so they gave us $1 million. And so with what should have been many times that, and the subscribers we had still from the New York insert, we started it.
And now for a quick break.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. oracle.com/strategic.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than their worth in real cash value. Ramp's business cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp for free.
Just go to ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Cards issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members of FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So you were engaged your senior year of college and you broke it off. And this is in the 1950s. And this is unusual. How did you make that decision?
Well, I just felt that if I got married, it was the last decision I would ever make. And it wasn't the fault of the man, who was a wonderful person and still the handsomest person I've ever seen in my life. He looked like kind of a Kashmiri prince, very tempting. And he had a way more interesting life than I did, which is why I had to go to India, because I knew that if I stayed home and took a job as a researcher at Time magazine — in those days, women researched and men wrote. You could only get a job as a researcher — that I would be too tempted. And I remember walking around New Delhi and getting a telegram from him saying that this was my last chance, and unless I was coming home, he was going to get engaged to someone else. And I remember, you know, writing a kind of sad but congratulatory telegram to him. Wow. You know, we do these things little by little. It isn't as if we say, hello, I'm going to live this kind of life forever. We do it one step at a time.
So speaking of marriage, you made a very deliberate choice not to get married, not to have children. And then when you were 66, you met David Bale and married him. Mm. Why?
Well, we loved each other, and we would have been together in any case. And he needed a green card. So he'd been born in South Africa, lived in England. He was constantly worried that the immigration office was going to knock on the door and take him away. I thought, well, you know, we've worked for 30 years to change the marriage laws. I would no longer lose my name, my credit rating, my legal residence. Also, we were going to see my friend Wilma Mankiller, who's was the chief of the Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma. And she offered us a Cherokee ceremony. So we got married kind of walking around the fire on her lawn. You know, who can resist that? It just seemed to make sense. I mean, if it had not been for his legal status, there would have been no reason to do it legally.
Was he the great love of your life?
No. I mean, you know what? That's what drives me crazy. Doesn't it drive you crazy that just because you got a marriage license, suddenly it's the great love of your life? There is no great love of your life. There are unique individual loves of your life. And I'm still friends with all my old lovers. Mm. I mean, you know.
I mean, I also think it's really interesting growing up, like we are, you know, taught about this fairy tale of the love of your life. And I just turned 40 this year. And for me, one thing I've learned in my adulthood is that some of the great loves of my life are my best friends.
Yes. I don't know. Our women friends, absolutely. And our men friends, right. And our old lovers. Amarlo Thomas always refers to her old lovers as her council of advisors.
And who are your best friends?
I'm sorry that Wilma Mankiller is no longer here, but she was certainly a best friend. Alice Walker, Amy Richards, who's a colleague as well. We work together all the time. Victoria Jackson, wonderful human being. It's a circle of women and old lovers.
Can you talk about the role of money in feminism?
I think it's a measure of inequality for us that's very important. When we see a man who's a parking lot attendant getting twice as much money as a woman who's a childcare attendant, you know, we say, wait a minute, it gives us a measure of what needs changing. Why is teaching still not well paid? Well, largely because it's still more a female profession than most other professions, you know, and you can just see that wherever. So what we're trying to do is to say not equal pay for equal work, but equal pay for comparable work, so that the amount of skill or education involved is the measure, not race and not gender.
And do you think that's changed over time?
Yes, no, it has changed over time. It just is still very far. There's still a big gender and a big racial divide.
So we just elected our first woman vice president. Have we made as much progress as you would have thought when you started Ms. Magazine?
No. You have to remember, you know, it was in 1972 that Shirley Chisholm, all by herself, took the white male only sign off the White House door. That was a long time ago. She was running for president. She was only on the ballot in 14 states, I think. But, you know, she did raise people's hopes and imaginations. Now we have a vice president and a wonderful vice president. I mean, I'm so proud, you know, that to feel represented by her in every way. But there was still a lot of resistance, say, to Hillary Clinton when she ran. And I think it's deep, you know, because I think that as long as children are raised mainly by women, that we are going to associate female authority with childhood. And people, not only men, but men especially, seem to feel regressed to childhood when they see a powerful woman. It's as if they're unmanned. It's as if they're eight again, which was the last time they saw one.
Wow.
Because I noticed that, and even my smart, wonderful, grown-up journalist men friends, and how they treated Hillary in the press.
I think it's really interesting to see with Kamala, you know, she's very close to her sister who became a single mother when she was a high school senior, and Mina, Kamala's niece, they're very close. And it's interesting to think about how we can reconstruct what we see as families. Mm-hmm. How do you think we could reconstruct all of that to kind of change how we view women?
Well, I think the most important part is to include men in it. You know, because until men are raising infants and little children as much as women are, it won't be equal, because men won't be able to develop the nurturing and emotional part of themselves, which they have just as much as women do. And of course, we see men who are loving, wonderful parents. So we know that this is possible. And women are less likely to develop the achieving talent, whatever part of themselves they develop outside the home. You know, until we have democratic families, we'll never have a democracy outside the home.
So true. One of the things I noted from your book was that you talk about the kindness of your father and how because of him, you never selected men who weren't kind to you. You know, you never selected violent men. That was not something you were ever attracted to. Talk about the role of self-esteem in all of this.
Well, I think in what you just described, I think it's harder for a girl and a young woman who to know that there are men different from her father. So if she has grown up with a controlling or violent or cruel father, it's harder for her to know that there are men who are not like that. It's normalized a little bit for her, or maybe it takes longer. So I think we see that in women who have married several times, that they often first married a man who was like their father before they could discover that there were other men.
To follow up on the relationship point, how do you manage conflict in relationships? You seem to do it so gracefully because you've been in a lot of situations full of conflict.
But you mean conflict within the relationship?
Yes, yes.
Of course you have differences, but I think there's been, it's been easier for me because I've been able to choose. I mean, most of the men I've met because we were in some social justice movement together. So we shared a lot of values. I suppose a disproportionate number of men have been in a racial justice movement, have been of a different quote unquote race, because that kind of gave us a shared context, and they tended to understand what women were up against too. So I think we've been able to share values, and I was not with somebody, at least not since the very beginning, who expected me to lead a traditional role.
Every day, as women especially, we all face microaggressions like any persecuted group. How do you deal with those microaggressions?
Well, I mean, I face fewer, so I'm not saying that, you know, my advice is totally valuable, because clearly I face fewer. But I try to name it or to try to fix it. You know, I mean, if you, one sign of an equal relationship is that each person is both talking and listening. So I try to remember myself to talk as much as I listen and listen as much as I talk. And whether that's with women or men, that helps to create an equality in the moment that then becomes organic.
And now for a quick break.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation.
I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating.
And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Can we talk about Phyllis Schlafly? I watched Mrs. America. How did you feel about that?
Well, I didn't watch it, actually, because I knew it would drive me crazy. I mean, the people who were doing it had given me and others scripts in advance, so I knew it was bonkers from the beginning, and I told them it was bonkers, because Phyllis Schlafly had absolutely nothing to do with stopping the Equal Rights Amendment. It was the insurance industry. That state by state, you know, because the insurance industry was, and maybe still is, I don't know, the one big national industry that isn't governed by federal regulations, it's governed state by state. So they did not want to equalize their actuarial tables because it would have cost them a fortune. And when we got within three states of victory, they suddenly realized, wait a minute, you know, this is going to cost us a lot of money. And so probably they hired, I don't know exactly how Phyllis Schlafly got involved. I think in the series it implied that she had been recruited elsewhere by the John Birch Society or somebody. Somehow she got involved. But she, as far as I know, she never changed one vote.
Oh, wow. Okay, this is amazing. My jaw's on the ground.
That's a problem with that series. I mean, people are, you know, writers and directors are welcome to do whatever they want. But it falsified history, and it made it seem that women were each other's problem. Yes, there were women who were against the Equal Rights Amendment, but they weren't what stopped it. It was the economic interests that stopped it.
Did you ever feel the weight of having an entire movement rest on your shoulders?
No, because I doesn't. If I had disappeared anywhere along the way, and if I disappeared tomorrow, the movement goes right on. It never, ever was true.
What do you worry about when you go to sleep now?
Why I haven't written, you know, any part of the book that I'm supposed to be working on during the day. I've just been answering my emails.
What book are you working on?
Well, with two friends, I'm writing a book about the Black women who were always a disproportionate part of the women's movement from the 60s and 70s forward. It's kind of just because of the way it was reported. I mean, you know, even when I was speaking, I was almost always speaking together with Flo Kennedy or Margaret Sloan, or, you know, we were consciously speaking as a Black woman and a white woman together. And the newspaper reporters would still report her as the civil rights movement and me as the women's movement. And we would always say, actually, this is a scene in the movie of The Glorious, too, in the Julie Taymor movie, that a reporter is treating Flo as if she's the part of the civil, and we're saying, no, we're both here. It's part of the women's movement. So it's a definitional problem that has always been wrong.
Do you have any regrets?
Oh, yes. Tons of regrets. Right. Tons. They're not big regrets or conventional regrets, maybe, because it's not like I regret, I don't know, not having children or a conventional family or a job, you know, things like that. But I regret wasting time. Because time is all there is, really.
What do you feel you wasted time on?
You know, watching television series and writing little things instead of something that might last for a little longer.
What role in your life does guilt play?
Well, it certainly plays, you know, a role in the sense of, what did I do today? How did I end up only doing emails? You know. Also with friends, I think, this friend is maybe not in such a good situation. Is she okay? You know, I want to call her. It's more, you know, it's because I feel an emotional tie or a tie of purpose that I haven't really attended to.
How do you take care of yourself?
You mean, do I exercise? No, I've never been a person who exercised in a classic way or in a regular way.
How do you think about the rest of your life unfolding?
Well, I occasionally try to remind myself that even if I live to 100, it's not that long. But that does not seem to interfere with my thinking that I'm immortal in some way. And thinking you're immortal does not cause you to plan well.
Well, we end every episode with a lightning round. So we would love to ask you a few quick questions that are more lighthearted.
Okay. All right.
Sam, do you want to start?
Sure. But I can't promise it's going to be lighthearted though, Amy.
Well, Mine are lighthearted.
I can't promise it's going to be quick either.
Do you take anything personally?
Sure.
What was the last thing that hurt your feelings?
I was reading something about a long ago campaign for Shirley Chisholm, and there was something very misunderstanding. You know, I had run as a delegate for Shirley Chisholm, and it made it seem as if I hadn't supported her, and that hurt my feelings.
What book are you reading right now?
Well, I'm actually not reading a book so much as referring to books I have read, looking for quotes. For instance, here's Sex and World Peace, a totally wonderful book by a group of people, mainly Valerie Hudson. And it's very helpful because it explains that the status of women is a bigger predictor of world peace than anything else. More than economics, more than hunger, more than border conflicts. Not because women are more important, but because, as I was saying about families, the conflict between males and females in the family normalizes conflict or normalizes hierarchy other places.
I have to ask, what is Gloria Steinem's morning beauty regimen? And do you color your hair?
I do. We don't know what's under here, right? And I started doing that in India. I mean, I was coloring my hair darker because I was wearing saris. Then I came home and I was greatly influenced by Breakfast at Tiffany's. So I streaked my hair. I just have continued to do that.
That's my favorite movie. I love that movie.
It is a wonderful movie, right? And other than that, I mean, it's just, soap washing and moisturizer and kind of cream tinted. It's tinted moisturizer, I think. Yeah. And completing my eyebrows. I think I've lost the end of my eyebrows.
Do you have a favorite cocktail?
No, I don't like to drink. I'm so not interested in wine or any kind of drink. It just doesn't taste good to me. I'd way rather have ice cream.
What flavor ice cream?
Practically anything. I mean, I've never met a flavor I didn't like.
If you could wave a magic wand and change one thing about the world, what would it be?
Mm-hmm. Labels. Because we made up race and colorism and so on. And gender, we made up gender. So I would do my best to remove labels and try to allow us to see our individual uniqueness and our shared humanity. And I think in a way COVID may help us do that consciousness-wise, because it does not care about race or class or gender or national boundaries.
Lou is our male perspective on the show, and he's been listening to this interview, and then he comes out with his one big question.
No pressure, right? You know, especially for me being a Black man in America, and you touched on a lot of topics, you know, that's related to the current, I guess, climate of the country. And my dad will always tell me, because he passed away in 2015, but when I was coming up, he would always tell me to go around older people and ask them what they would do. You know, like if they could relive their life, because that can possibly be my foresight and things that I can focus on. If you were 30 years old, what would be your primary like driving force and focus?
Oh, that's hard, because part of our uniqueness is the time we came up in, as you know, so it's hard to separate those things. But I think it would be trying earlier. I'm not sure I at that point had realized I still thought there were boundaries, if you know what I mean. I still thought that there was such a thing as a national boundary that mattered, as opposed to us all living on spaceship Earth. Or I maybe didn't yet understand that you don't learn from sameness, you learn from difference. So for my own security, I was maybe too much looking for people who shared experience as opposed to people who had different experiences. It took me longer to learn that.
Well, thank you. I wrote that down. You don't learn from sameness, you learn from difference.
Differences.
Mm. This is so amazing. One of my big takeaways, Gloria, just so you know, which I'm going to repeat everywhere, is equal pay for comparable work. I've never heard it said that way, and that is exactly how we should talk
about
it.
Yes, no, absolutely, because there's such occupational segregation by gender and race, and you know, so we don't think about it that way, but we should, especially when we look at all these people in boardrooms doing nothing or very very little.
I loved what she said about comparable work. And I also was fascinated when she said that she felt if she got married, it would be the last decision she'd ever make, which I think she was alluding to, you know, she wouldn't be able to have her own bank account, credit cards, work would be different. So many laws that have changed since then.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think very few of us today in 2021 know that as late as the 1970s, a woman could not get a credit card aside from one paired with her husband. Right? Like that is not very long ago. I also thought, I mean, the thing I loved that Gloria said when she was talking about marriage is that her husband wasn't the great love of her life, that we can have many great loves. And I think that's just, it's important. It's an important thing to say.
I have to tell you, so my last book, as you know, is about work-life balance. And one of the things that always struck me is I felt like if someone had a confidence crisis, which is honestly an epidemic among women across our country, if there is a confidence crisis, it's impossible to teach someone how to negotiate a salary or ask for a raise or advocate for themselves at home. It's all about self-esteem. And when I read her new book, actually it's a new foreword to her old book, which is an extraordinary book that I highly recommend everyone read, called A Revolution from Within. This was like the Bible of self-esteem. It's not just like new agey meditation, yoga, you know, go have a bath. It was all about like statistics and stories and the history of self-esteem. And I can't even express how valuable the book is. Like I was highlighting almost every sentence.
You know, Sam, I don't think we've really talked about this, but, you know, I've struggled with self-esteem since I was a little girl. I was teased when I was in first grade for being overweight.
Wow.
And that really just kind of spiraled me into doubting my self-esteem for decades. But I do think it is a crisis, and it's definitely a book to read.
And that's really hard to believe knowing you now, because you are so confident and it's such a big part of who you are. And I think so many women look up to you because you exude confidence. So what, for you, Amy, what helped you recover that confidence?
Well, it's interesting, particularly following up with this conversation with Gloria, because what helped me gain confidence was becoming a mother, because just what was really important crystallized for me, and I stopped giving a shit about everything else. Mm. Like, truly, like, I don't care what people think of me anymore, because it doesn't matter. As long as I'm kind and I'm good to my friends and my family and the people I love and that I work with, that's what's important.
There must be more to it than that. Like, think about it. The problem is, Amy, that most women who are listening, who've become moms, didn't have that switch for them. In fact, a lot of women, when they become moms, lose their confidence. What was it for you? There must be more than just, I treat people well. I mean, what was it? When was it that you were like, I'm a badass? Like, when did that happen?
I mean, honestly, like, I think the biggest transition for me was when I left my corporate job to start The Riveter, and I was going to start a small business, and through a series of conversations decided to raise millions of dollars and build this national company, and realizing that, like, oh, like, anybody can actually do this, right? Like, you don't have to have a special degree. You don't have to have a special set of skills. Like, you can just make a run at it and you can do it.
So it sounds like you realized what you were capable of when you started a company.
But I do go back to becoming a mother, because that was a shift for me. And it was this thing of, like, you've really got to clarify your priorities, how you spend your mental energy, all of these things. Because, and part of it was that I had 4 kids in 4 years. Like, let's not lie. Like, I don't have space for a lot. Maybe there's some meta point, Sam, that, like, once I had kids, my own mortality and what it meant and my legacy started to mean more. So I was just like, what matters?
For me, like, I always credit my confidence with having parents who made me think I, like, walked on water and could do anything. And when I've interviewed famous people, you know, leaders, whoever, people who excel in their fields, that is one thing they all have in common, is that they had parents who made them feel they could be anything. And when I read Gloria's book, even though she had a lot of challenges in her childhood, I mean, she had a mom who struggled with mental illness and a father who was always on the road, they did make her feel, she even cites the fact that they never once spanked her. They never made her feel anything less than she could be anything. And they really, really gave her tons of love and confidence. And I do think that, you know, as parents, we'll trip and fall and we'll make so many mistakes. But if you can give your kids that one gift, which is making them believe in themselves, then you've overcome a lot of weaknesses.
I completely agree. Thanks for listening to What's Her Story with Sam and Amy.
We would so appreciate if you would leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. And of course, connect with us on social media at What's Her Story Podcast.
What's Her Story with Sam and Amy is powered by my company, The Riveter, at theriveter.co, and Sam's company, Park Place Payments, at parkplacepayments.com.
Thanks to our producer, Laurel Moglen, our podcast associate, Emma Hard, and our male perspective, Lou Burns.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're going to love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross.
Tiffany Cross.
Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.